Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sri Devi, who is here to speak with us about our 12 grade graduates in Cantawamba. Welcome, Sri Devi.
Hi, Jen. So great to be here. Or rather, I'm sorry, I'm so happy to be here.
So happy to be here. Exactly. Exactly. And just such a fun topic. I know we did put out some information about it in the recent newsletter that just came out. But I think you and I are having a parallel experience that every time we talk to Teresa, there's just kind of a bigger and bigger picture of what a big deal this is and kind of what an exciting point we are in with the project. And so we just thought it would be fun to have a chance to talk about it a little bit more on Good News Update.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember when on a call with Teresa, it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago or four, sometime recently, where she had just gotten the first set of exam results and we were talking, and then all of a sudden we had this moment of, wait, hold on, Sylvia passed? That means a grade 12 girl. Wait, we have a grade 12 graduate? And we just like both had this moment of like, oh my gosh. And it was like,
It happened.
And it was just, it was so, so beautiful, that moment of going, wow, because, you know, I happen to have talked to Teresa today. We have a weekly call, and she and I were chatting about how now we have four girls who are in grade 12 last year, and then we have two girls who are grade 12 this year, and she mentioned that one of the grade 12 girls this year was one of the first 100 children.
Yeah, and you know what? I have to hold myself back a tiny bit on that one, Sri David, because I'm looking at a picture of her right now when she is, for anyone who's really been around the project for a long time, you'll remember the first 100 children video, which is actually still on our website. If you go to the Africa part of our website, you can find it. And her name is Bernadette Bwalya. Mm-hmm. And she was I was taken by her from the very start. And she was the child that I, quote, sponsored. We don't, with our project, we don't have sort of a literal one-to-one sponsorship, but more when someone chooses to sponsor a child per month, meaning they give a certain amount of money per month in order to cover the expenses of one child in the program, then we offer people the opportunity to hold a particular child in their heart as they do that. And so she was the one. And so there she is. But, you know, against all odds, one of the girls who's really hanging in there, and she's now standing to be a grade 12 graduate this year. It's so fun and exciting.
Yeah, and I think just that moment of realizing, I think it was 2005, the first 100 kids, and the priority was feeding, you know, as Teresa said,
absolutely.
You know, if you could do anything.
Yeah.
And then it was, and then it kind of, the program built, and we started feeding more children. And then it was, okay, there was the preschool, and then there was, you know, so many things have built and built and built. And now here it is 13 years later, and Bernadette is a grade 12 girl through the support of this entire community and her choice to continue to participate and go to school and stay in the program. It's really beautiful. And so to see these four grade 12 girls who made that commitment. And one of the things that we just found out last week is, I think if people read the monastery newsletter and the Africa Project update, they heard that Sylvia passed her grade, her exams, and is officially a graduate and can go on to college if she chooses. We just found out that Miriam, who we thought hadn't passed, did in fact pass. She passed 6 of her 7 subjects. So she's now also a graduate. So we have 2 grade 12 girls who graduated.
Yes. Yeah. Amazing. And I think there's all kinds of, it's a very complex system, the way those standardized, I mean, are countrywide exams. And so the sort of red tape behind putting all the girls through the exams and then getting the scores out and et cetera, I think there was some confusion in there about, as you say, that Miriam thought she didn't pass. And then when the actual physical exam scores were distributed, turns out she did. So,
Yeah. And I think something that's so beautiful, though, as we were having this conversation that I think was so lovely, articulated in the monastery newsletter Africa Project Update, is what all the choices each of the girls are making. So we have Sylvia, who's passed, and now we have Esther and Rachel, who are sitting for their exams, that their parents are supporting them. and putting the money forward themselves 100% to sit for the exams. And then we had Miriam, of course, who said her parents unfortunately weren't able to, but before she realized she had passed, decided that the kwacha that she was getting as an allowance to give it to Teresa to hold on until she could take the exams again, which to me, that power of that level of commitment is so incredible to me. And one additional note about that now. So Teresa shared with me this morning that Miriam passed 6 of her 7 subjects, which you only have to pass 5. However, Miriam is studying again for the 7th subject that she did not pass because she wants to pass it.
Oh, I have total, just complete goosebumps. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And I guess we say it enough that people really have, I hope, some sense of what they're up against. You know what? I mean, here's a young woman who, you know, she goes home every night and she doesn't have electricity in her house. And there is no running water in her house. And you know, she, as we say, her family wasn't even able to afford what to us are very small fees to resit for these exams. They're not able to afford that, which means a lot of times they're hungry. You know, I mean, they're just, the list goes on. And here's someone who, against all odds, has begun to see the potential of that attitude of mind, of wanting to take advantage of this opportunity and do everything she can do to set herself up to have the life that I project she knows she can have and wants to have.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just that level of commitment. You know, and it just, you know, as I was sitting there and it was just dropping in, you know, what, you know, our conditioning could say to us, oh, that's enough. You're good enough. No, you don't need to, you know. And for her to go, no, yeah, I pass. Yes, I can go to college, but there's a subject and I need to study more. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to take that exam. And just that conviction, that commitment, I think is so inspiring just for the reasons that you're talking about, Jen, what they're up against. You know, one of the things that Teresa was sharing with me this morning is the incredible impact that this is having in the community. And people are coming up to her and saying, you know, girls normally are getting pregnant. They're drinking moonshine. You have these girls who are going to grade 12. You know, you have girls who are going to Toabo, and we can see the difference. It's changing the community by supporting these young girls. And one thing I have to tell you real quick is the other thing that was particularly touching is we actually got the exam results. Teresa sent a photo, and so we were able to see what they scored. And the highest subject for all of the 3 girls, we're still waiting on one, was English language. That was the one they did best in.
It just makes you want to sit down and cry.
Huge.
Oh.
Just huge.
And it just makes me wish, you know, I mean, we would have Teresa on these good news updates all the time if it weren't for the time difference is exactly wrong. So really, every time, as people who live in Europe and live in those parts of the world know, every time we're waking up, they're going to bed. When they're going to bed, we're waking up. So, we, you know, we hate to drag it out of bed in the middle of the night. But when you say things like that, I just want to say to that team, and we do regularly, you're amazing. You're unbelievable. You're completely inspiring. I mean, because they're up against all the same things.
Yeah.
You know, the quote, grown-ups, who, well, they are grown-ups, the adults who are in there every day supporting these girls are up against all of the same factors. And as you say, that just that inspiration that I think the whole community is taking from it, and the image I just got is that image of 10 fingers, where there are a lot of people on the team who they're not going to, you know, I think of someone like Older Foster. She's not going to learn English and go back to school and get a degree and et cetera, et cetera. But I project that's not where she's focused. Where she's focused is she's giving 10 fingers to these girls who are doing it for the whole community, and that everyone is taking such a joy in that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, as we have these 2 grade 12 girls who are sitting this year. So now what we have is these grade 12 girls who just sat, who are now helping to mentor and support those girls. And they've been there. And just that power of experience. Now we have a group of girls who have the experience, who have gone to grade 12, who can then mentor these next grade 12 girls, and so on and so forth, and so on and so forth. So you just see that impact. I could just imagine it's like the image that's just dropping in is like a waterfall almost. It starts and it just starts cascading down and touching everything, every rock, every crevice. You know, it's going to just, you know, have this beautiful flow. And and we have these girls now who have the experience and can support other girls. And the other girls can go, wow, four girls, they got to grade 12, you know. I'm going to keep going. You know, those grade 6 girls, those grade 7 girls, maybe the little ones, the pre-K ones. You know,
it's, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that waterfall image is such a good one, because to remember that back when Bernadette, you know, that picture I have of her when she was little, she was not seeing any girls in her community in school in grade 12. She wasn't seeing that. And so, but these little girls are, and you know they're watching. And I mean, we can remember, I can remember, you know, being in second grade and looking at the eighth graders even. Wow, they're so big. And they're grown-ups, and they're, right? So to have these little girls, and of course boys, we always have to say that, because the program, the 1,000 children, really is about 50-50 boys and girls. So it's not that there aren't boys in the mix. It's just that culturally, the small resources that there are always going to go to the boys. And so we're beginning to build this culture of really valuing the girls' education as well. And so here are these little girls watching these big girls grow up. Mm-hmm. And as you say, it's really impacting the parents as well, because we're now seeing parents who are coming forward, having seen that group of girls who moved to a semi-private school from the girls' program, and saying, well, gosh, I want to pitch something in and see if my child can do that too. I mean, that's extraordinary to have that shift happen.
Yeah. And that other piece that about the girls who are at the semi-private school, about English, because, you know, from the beginning, the focus has been on English, because I think the thing we've been exploring is, if you can speak English, that is what's going to set you up to succeed. And it helps you with all of the other subjects, because that English language comprehension is so critical. And Teresa shared how much these girls who are at this other school, because they're there all day, they take the minibus together and there and back, how much their English has improved, and that they walk around speaking it without any embarrassment, without feeling shy or nervous. There's a confidence, she says, they have. And she said, and as she said to me today, she's like, you can tell that they've changed just by looking at them, that they have changed. Yeah.
And here's the thing. It's the exact same process, because now we've got this group of girls who are, English is going to become the language that they're used to speaking all the time. Now they're coming back into Cantalumba, into their community with their buddies. Now their buddies are going to want to be speaking English too. And we should say, as a caveat for anyone who doesn't know a lot about the project and about Zambia, the reason English is such a big deal is not just that it's a global language, but also it's the language of commerce in Zambia. So all of the subjects they're taking, science, math, you know, all of it, it's all in English. So they really, really need that fluency in order to be successful. But it's just so extraordinary that same cascade effect is going to happen with these girls who are bringing the English language back to the community.
Yep. So it's all very exciting, and, you know, it's so great to just get to be a part of this process. And I know, Teresa, I asked her if she was anything she wanted me to share, because I told her I was going to be talking on the show tonight.
Great.
She said a really big thank you to everyone in the Living Compassion community for all of the support, and she sends a huge hug to everyone.
And I always say when I hear that, for anyone who has had a Teresa Kapenda hug, there's nothing quite like it. In fact, I think, Shudeva, we need to get our plane tickets. What do you think?
I think so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon and bringing your enthusiasm and support to the program. It's just such a huge gift.
Oh, my gosh. It's the greatest privilege I've ever had. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Shudeva. Take good care.
All right. Thank you. Go
Bye-bye.
Happy.
Go happy. Bye. All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Shudeva. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. I'm pleased to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. That was a fun conversation.
It's one of those that gives you goosebumps.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I love getting a regular update about what's going on there, and I feel like I got that tonight.
Oh, absolutely. And what was dropping in for me during that conversation is that thing we talk about in practice where it's such a gift to be the difference, right? Because people don't do what other people do, right? There's a modeling there that is so powerful.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And I was going to go there, Ashwini, with practice here as we do it.
Mm-hmm.
When I go on retreat or when I go to the monastery and I see you and the guide and the facilitator, and I think, wow, how do they do that? How are they so present? And it inspires me to participate because I know that participation is the way to get there.
Yeah. Yes. Practice is the way to get there, and it's that beautiful place that we've been exploring in the morning radio show, where what you project, you see, is your portal to the application in practice, right? Because it's not. It is a projection. It is the ability to be present to a quality or a state of being in someone. That is only possible to be present to if it's in you. And so that's the place we practice returning to on a moment-by-moment basis.
Yes, yes, yes. It's a very beautiful process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, incredibly inspiring.
Yes, yes, exactly so. Mm. And I have announcements here, unless you'd like to start us in another direction.
Oh, no. Please,
okay.
Michael.
Okay. The powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat is a chance for participants to see directly how we are rejected and punished by the voices of self-hate and to discover how to let that go. This foundation work is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important do. Three retreats will be held this summer at the monastery, June 23rd through 30th, July 7th through 14th, and July 28th through August 4th. And if you're already meditating in the morning or wish to start, why not enjoy the extra boost of meditating with Sangha? Virtual meditation groups are a unique way to receive the support and connection of practicing with Sangha. These conference call meditation sessions include a 30-minute sit followed by a reading. A full schedule of virtual groups is available on the Virtual Meditation Groups webpage. You can listen to two new interviews with Sherry by going to sherryhuber.com and clicking on interviews. And for these and all other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
Those interviews are really inspiring, Michael. I would encourage everyone to listen to them. They're really fun.
Oh, great, great. I haven't listened to them yet, so I look forward to that. And if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, you can make guest show and get in the queue by pressing *6 and then 1. And a focus on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great. Okay, Ashwini, you ready?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini. Hey, Michael. It's Karen from North Carolina.
Hey Karen.
Oh, my gosh. When Michael said, Karen, are you ready?
Yes. Hello,
oh, my gosh. It's been so much time that I've been able to be on the Tuesday night calls, and it just dropped in about, 10 minutes. The good news update just brought tears to my eyes, and it's just so inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to be in that energy of, I project the life choosing life, right, amongst and flourishing against all odds. It just opens the heart so much.
Yes, and it's so relative to my practice. I can see all the steps that these girls are taking are the same steps I'm taking.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that all the steps you're taking are exactly the same that the girls are taking. And I project that step is to make the choice for the life you want, the experience you want to have moment by moment. And it's what we're up against is the same thing.
Yes, yes. And, the contents are different. And I just love that. And since I've been back from a retreat, it's just been an onslaught from conditioning and a very challenging time for me. And I welcome that in a way because conditioning would have me say only in a way, but because it really shows me what I hear this static. I don't know where that's coming from, but it just shows me what I'm up against and how much I'm determined to stay the course.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. So, you go on retreat, and if you have an expansive experience, which we tend to have on retreat, there's a lot of backlash, and so there's a way in which, having gone on retreat, you almost expect it, welcome it. Because it illustrates for you exactly what your choice is. There is a determination and a willingness to keep choosing life against this worthy opponent.
Yes, yes. So I don't really have a whole lot more to say.
Well, would you like to tell us what has been challenging and what a little bit more about what is challenging and how you've been practicing with it?
Well, there's my sitting practice has fallen by the wayside. And we did yoga twice a day on retreat. And I loved watching my body open and respond. Schedule since I've been back it's been really challenging to keep up with that. So that's the clue of what I'm up against, that I really have to really burrow down and find the willingness the radio show and the how we do everything is just the loving kindness and the compassion for the practitioner.
Uh-huh. And is the schedule challenging to keep because of circumstances, or is it because there's attention on a conversation and you get talked out of doing those things?
I think it's probably both, but it's more the conversation than the circumstances.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so, yes, then it's that practice of compassionate self-discipline, right, that there's willingness and there's the kindness to support the person who wants to make the choices that are good for her, that take care of her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Continuing with recording and listening, and, not every practice has fallen by the wayside. I mean, recording and listening is really a big key to keeping me moving forward is what comes to mind, although that doesn't seem like that's the best that I could do as far as this description. So there are
certain... Well, it keeps you at center, right? It brings you back to your heart.
as much as possible. It does. It does. Yeah. I mean, it's just so interesting because conditioning wants to get in and control everything.
Yeah, it wants to tell you that you're not practicing, and here are the ways in which you're not keeping your commitments or not keeping the schedule. And what we use the recorder for is to keep coming back to what is true.
Yeah. And as I said before, it is really an exciting time to be in this process of it's like, you know, the resistance gets stronger and then you just put the pedal to the metal.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. The resistance gets stronger and it becomes your signal to actually double down the effort. And as you double down the effort, it escalates, and then you have to keep finding that energy and life momentum in order to keep choosing life. And I see now what you were pointing to about the girls in Cantalumba, right? The odds are not stacked in our favor when conditioning has that place of, we could call it escalation. And it takes such a level of determination and willingness to keep showing up. And to keep showing up in kindness, right? Not in punishment or self-hatred or fear.
Yes, the kindness is the most important part. And it's just been really, it's shining moments because in my life I have wonderful people that come and visit me every day and see what I do. And to take the time to really be with them when they come and visit in my studio and not go with the voices that try to talk me out of being present, and that I'm too busy, that, you know, just, I mean, it's hard to describe, but it's actually with everybody, and just to be as much present to as much as possible with what comes to me.
Yes, because that is what we're practicing, right, Karen? Presence is what we're practicing, not keeping commitments necessarily. So there are marvelous ways in which we train to come to presence and that support us to do that training consistently. And sometimes in life there are just circumstances where the practice to presence, the practice of presence, is in our lives, in interactions and in the work that we do, in the tasks that we have to get done, in the interactions we have. Right? It's as much a structure of practice as a formal sit.
Yes, yes. This is so perfect because those of us who are out in the world, you know, those are really our practice places.
Exactly. In fact, which require a higher level of mastery, which is why we sit in formal meditation, right? Because that supports us to train the attention or train the awareness in a way that's available when we go out into those situations which are much more fluid and less controlled. And, you know, yeah, the crucible is the meditation hall, but the Olympic League of the crucible happens to be in interactions with people in the world.
Mm. Well, thank you so much. I'm just so thrilled that I was on the queue and got picked.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
It was lovely to hear from you, Karen. Take care.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Karen. Ashwini, I love that idea that we are practicing presence everywhere. Whether I'm in meditation or sitting in traffic or sitting at work. Yes.
Yeah, that the voices would tell us that unless we are keeping a formal practice commitment, somehow or the other we're not practicing that. And just to recognize that we're practicing everywhere. Paying attention everywhere.
Yes, yeah, and the other pitfall I can see from conditioning is that, well, I sat this morning, and so that's enough. I don't need to pay attention anymore today because I did my practice.
Exactly. Yeah. Here's the only domain in which you need to practice paying attention. All of the other places, you can attend to me.
Right,
Yeah, it's a good point. Such a good point to recognize.
Yes. And we have another caller here.
Wonderful.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there?
Hi, this is Greta.
Oh,
hey, Greta.
Hi, I was all muted. Yes, happy to be here. And what I wanted to talk about is just watching how I've been in this process of being in collusion with conditioning around sugar, especially. And it's been going on, it's been in my awareness forever, I think. And I think just a combination of our year-long retreat and actually physically starting to feel the effects I'm projecting, that's what's going on with me physically, has finally gotten me to drum up the willingness to go up against that habit of just, you know, falling into the trap over and over again that I just need this sweet thing.
So you get, so it's the process of addiction to sugar. And finally being able to not only see the process, but how the process, how there's collusion with the process so that the addiction is maintained. Or in other words, how ego continues to control you. Right? That's really what the addiction is about.
Oh, absolutely, because I've seen this addiction forever. And there's just this way, like we talk about ego talking to ego, there's this way that, you know, you're not going to tell me what I can't do. You're not going to be the boss of me. I can do what I want. And what I think may be part of the trigger was our discussion about compassion, because, you know, on all levels, I know it's not compassionate for this person to do that. And yet, you know, I still go there. There's this way in which I guess, you know, we talk about it as having to wear it away, and that's what it seems like. But I'm also calling in for the support to stick with it, you know, to say, yes, this is what is most compassionate for this person, is to take better care and to not be in this sneaky relationship with conditioning over here about sleep.
Oh, my God, yes. It's just, it's so big to recognize that, first of all, there's a process that controls us, that when we're identified with that process, we're going to actually lash out and keep what would assist us, what would support us at bay. There's such a super identification with the maintenance system, as you said. You know, you can't be the boss of me. You can't tell me what to do. I'll do whatever I want. That assertion of ego, we actually, you know, often reject the things and the people that would support us in achieving our heart's desire, and that recognition that in order to go up against that, we really have to have tremendous compassion for the person who's caught in that process and really, really want to assist that person, because that's where the willingness stems from. If it's, I'm going to go up against that, then oftentimes it's so easy to get seduced by the system. Because resistance against resistance doesn't resolve the issue.
Right, right. And I just feel the, you know, you described it perfectly, and I just feel that way that that as long as that, I mean, however many lifetimes worth of conditioned habits we have to unpack, as long as, you know, I'm aware of this, I see it, as long as I'm not willing to do anything for this person, it's, you know, any compassion I might extend to another person seems so disingenuous, because where am I coming from to do that, to act in, you know, this way for, you know, supposedly act like this for this person, but, You know, we're, feels so unkind and so false. You know, it doesn't ring true if we're not, you know, if we're not really acting out of compassion. We're just acting out of the way we're supposed to behave, or that's the right person thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, two things you said that are so important, right, Greta? We always say this, that we end suffering when we've suffered enough. And that it is the same thing with addiction, that addiction to sugar or addiction to anything else, that there is a point at which enough is enough, and we'll do whatever it takes not to have that person be subject to the torture or the seduction or whatever else it is. And there's that place where we recognize that to be in integrity with how we want to live, we want to choose that in every aspect of ourselves, right? And, or in every aspect of our lives. And that to make that choice for this person, to have compassion for this person, is really the only place from which it's possible to extend that compassion to everyone else. Because otherwise, the conditioned voice can judge you for, can conclude with judgment that says, well, sure, you're compassionate to her, but is that really compassion? When are you a really compassionate person if you can't find that compassion to go up against me, right?
Yeah, exactly. And as we've been talking about all along, it's I'm maintaining that relationship with conditioning, and if it can pull the wool over my eyes about this, how many other things am I believing and falling for? And, you know, I finally just had that conversation with myself that said, okay, well, you know, if you're going to eat sugar, then you're going to sit there with the recorder and watch what happens and just going to record the whole time. And if you're not going to eat sugar, you can sit there with your recorder and watch what happens and record the whole time. Because either way, you know, you're going to see what is controlling you about everything. Yeah.
Well, and that is just so important, that approach is so important. Because if we just make a decide that I'm going to be perfect, I'm never going to eat sugar again, we're just part of that cycle of battering cycle, right? The stress of not eating bills and bills and bills and bills, and those voices talk to us, and we feel so stressed that we have to cope by eating sugar, and then we get beaten up, and then we make the decision to be perfect, and right around the battering cycle we go. And so to recognize that the only way to work with this is to bring awareness to it, to bring conscious, compassionate awareness to it, that regardless of the decision, the recorder is there, and there's just paying close attention to how you're controlled, because bringing that level of attention will allow us to have a different choice. Rather than engaging with that system to go, I'm never going to do this again. Because we know we've done that a million times and it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's really helpful the way you laid it out, just so I can hear that and see how it works and has worked many times, because it goes both ways. Sometimes I max out on the sugar and say, I am never eating that again, and I never do. That one thing, whatever it is, you know, I don't pick that up because I know it's poison. But, you know, then somewhere along the line, something else gets substituted. Oh, it's not as bad as that thing, so you can have this thing. And then it's this whole set of rationale about, you know, how you can do these things that don't really make any sense and aren't good for you. And it's just so convoluted. So it's helpful to call it the battering cycle and just see it for what it is without believing that these nuances mean something different.
Exactly. That's where the recording assists, right? That in observing the process, we get to get so much information about how the control process works. And living in listening to the recording of, well, it's going to say this, and then it's going to do that, and then it's going to say this, and then it's going to do that, that allows us to, that gives us access to that information when we're about to make the choice that we're not supposed to make, because we go completely unconscious, right? If there's tremendous willingness to break the addiction, what happens when I reach for that ice cream tub and then wake up when it's empty, right? I wasn't there because there was nothing that had access to me to say, perhaps you don't want to do that. to pay attention to that process and bring such a level of awareness to everything that it's saying during the process means we can't, it can't get us to go unconscious. And that's how we sort of triumph over the process with a lot of compassion if we do go unconscious.
Right, right. Yeah, I can see so many ways that that has unfolded in the past. So I appreciate your insight. Been very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, good. A lot of stickies on that process map.
Yeah, yeah, I'll be busy pasting stuff on the wall.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, Michael. Good night.
Take care, Greta.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Greta. Yes, Ashwini, I had exactly the same sense as you two were talking, that there was just a tremendous willingness to bring increasing awareness and scrutiny to everything that goes on in that process, and especially a lack of judgment about when I eat sugar and when I don't. And through that process, it seems to me that a lot of clarity and compassion results from it.
Yes, because the bamboozle I project, right, Michael, is that there's a lot of willingness, and that willingness should make the difference. Willingness does make a difference, but it's awareness that actually transforms, and the bamboozle is that I should be able to do something about this, whereas the trick is in watching the process, not doing something about the process, because as soon as I step into that place, I am in the system that is controlling me. And that's what we see.
Yes, yes, exactly. Ashwini, we're going to break here and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back to talk with more callers.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Great.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the...
Hi, this is Marianne calling from Canada.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I want to say how thrilled I am to hear about these girls graduating from Cantalumba. Since I watched the web feed that we had during the Africa Project and actually saw them, and then to hear how well they're doing is just so... It just feels like so connected to the world.
Yes. The process that dropped in when you were saying that, right, Marian? There's just a way in which when we participate, that when we participate in something like that webcast, you know the girls, you see their faces. It comes in some way. I hate to use the word, but it's personal. That there is a connection that has made, and therefore there's the ability to celebrate that accomplishment of everyone in that community because we feel so part of it, so tangibly part of it.
Well, because we're not separate.
Because we're not separate, exactly. We're not separate, and we've allowed ourselves to participate in a way that eliminates that separation. Right, the connection has been made.
Yeah, so the other thing that I saw with that report was how Sri Devi was talking about how things cascaded and mm-hmm. into the community. And I've just, why I called in tonight was about the cascading experiences that I've had in the last little while,
mm-hmm.
which mm-hmm. are around having an insight that the pain that I experienced was an ego bamboozle, and by blowing the cover on it, it opened the door to a cascade of insights.
Uh-huh. So the insight was around pain, and can you say more about what you saw that blew the cover open?
Well, just that I thought that the pain was not real, that it was an ego distraction. So it said, focus on the pain, and then you don't have to be present. you're into the vortex of pain. And since I talked about it, the pain has decreased.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So I know it's true.
Yes. Well, it's just it's amazing, right? That to recognize the process that maintains itself by having your attention on pain, that the conversation about the pain was the distraction, and when the attention was not on the conversation, there's the ability to be with it, and the pain has actually decreased. Because the attention is not on the conversation about pain, I predict?
Yes, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so what happened after that was that I had some painful content in my life that I had to deal with. And so I had done a bunch of recordings about it. And over several days processed what was going on. And then one night I couldn't sleep, so I got up and I listened to the recordings that I'd made and had so many insights. So mm-hmm. I recognized without doing those recordings, I would have not seen what was really going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So if I'm following the cascade metaphor, the ability to talk about your process assisted you to see a bamboozle where the conversation and the focus on the pain was the distraction, and that once you stopped listening to that conversation, you discovered how unreal the pain was. And that same process around painful content, to really talk about what's going on for you and to process that assisted you, and then to listen to it assisted you to see a whole bunch of things, to have a lot of insight.
Yeah, so I just felt like, in fact, I was laughing because I kept recording some more. Okay, I saw this insight and I would record it.
Uh-huh.
And then I would go, oh yes, there is another insight, and then I'd have to record about that. So by the fifth uh-huh. one, I was just laughing because it just kept going on and on. And I just realized how valuable that experience of recording and listening is. Just
yes, yes, because it produces what I was watching, what I was getting as an image of that cascade, right, Marianne, is that
yes.
I record and listen, I receive an insight. That insight allows me to receive another insight. And by the time I'm so in the process of insighting that I can't even keep up with the insights that are flooding in. And we break out in laughter because we're delighted, right? Because we're living in that conversation with life. Which I project is the reason that conditioning has our attention on something that's really small and really not enough, something wrong, to keep us out of that other experience where just life is just bubbling through us.
Yeah, so the initial insight about the pain was, like, that's a big piece of content in my life, and it seemed like as soon as I could see through that, it opened up the energy channels to see a bunch more. And so that, you know, just, I just had the experience as after that of seeing so clearly. It was like the world just became so bright and real and clear. So I'm just sort of have so much expanding faith in what I'm doing.
Yes, expanding faith that that if we show up and trust the process, the magic happens.
Yeah,
and you have an experience of that. The clarity of presence, life is brighter and the colors are brighter and everything is so clear because a barrier fell. Like we saw through something.
Yeah, so I had to just phone in and say, you know, I love this practice.
Well, we'll all join you in saying the same, Marianne. We love this practice.
So thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in and saying that.
Okay, good night.
Can't hear
good
too
night.
Often. Good night.
Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, Marianne. Yes, I was projecting a lot of lit up energy in that conversation. Mm-hmm. Actually,
miracle. It's the Rumi poem, that we're here just to let the barriers to love fall, right? Every knot, every painful place, every suffering place is something that is a barrier between us and all that is, and so we're just in the process of experiencing it, using the tools, processing through it to the other side, to clarity.
Yes, yes. And using recording and listening to great advantage in the process.
Exactly, because we really have to be present to what is to what is going on in the moment. I think it's Jen that often says the portal is in the moment. Whatever's going on for me now is what I have to see through in order to get to the other side. And so to use the recorder to do that, to talk from what my experience is, allows me to work through it rather than listen to a conversation in head that either wants to avoid it, fix it, or comment about it, or blame me for it, right?
Yes, yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it has a quality of presence.
Yes.
Sorry, Michael?
I was just going to say, your voice is breaking up to me a little bit, and I can still understand you.
Okay. Well, I won't move.
Okay, great. You sound great there. Whenever we check, of course, you always sound great. Huh? And we're going to talk with another caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Well, I'm in love with this practice, too, and this is Janice from Victoria, B.C. Hi, Ashwini and Michael.
Hi, Janice.
Hi, Jen.
Here, I can make you me a little louder, maybe. I just have appreciated all the calls, and I just loved hearing the update about Africa, and it is fantastic to see the inspiration that's going on and rippling out with the whole community.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed it is. It truly is. It truly is such an acknowledgement of what generosity achieves, right? All of us participating in this process. And just showing up and the impact that it's having.
Yes, it is. It's so inspiring. It's so inspiring, mm-hmm. incredibly. Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be what comes back to us, right, Janice, the willingness to be more open and to give more and to participate more and to be inspired by that, what I would probably call heroism.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A perfect word for it, heroism. So what I'm looking at, and it's kind of being covered, it's like there is an addiction to filling up any spare moment with doing something that grabs my attention. It's like a distraction. Oh, this needs to be done, but it needs to be done now, usually when I have other things that I need to be going to do. So,
mm-hmm.
And I,
what a subtle observation that the bamboozle is to, the addiction is to filling up the moment with what needs to be done, almost as a form of procrastinating on something else that has to be done. It's sort of like a precedence, right? This is going to bump that other thing out of the queue, and to notice that that's the process that's happening for you.
Yes. Oh, that's a perfect way. It is like something bumps the other thing out of the queue. And I've had my eye on this for a long time, but I think the change that is happening is that I can see that willingness, like you said earlier, in a conversation, that the willingness isn't enough to change it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that willingness, that the level of attention that you've been paying to the process allows you to see it happening and be present enough to watch that process attempt to bump that thing and to be able to create, to train yourself to say, no, I'm going to stick to doing the thing that I was supposed to be doing, not the thing that you want me to do instead. We have to stay there for the ability to make that choice.
Yes, staying with that ability. And also, when it seems like it's too much to stay with that ability, to observe when it doesn't actually happen, not to get a beating about it.
Oh, that's right. Yes, no self-hate, right? No change in behavior is possible if you get beaten, if you don't change the behavior, because that just reinforces another behavior we want to change, which is to do, and we're here to do everything compassionately and with kindness, to be with the human being, to be with life, to be life in kindness. So in anything we undertake that we want to change, change something that causes suffering, the compulsive is no self-hate.
Ashwini, you sound like you're breaking up a little bit to me.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Janice. Did you hear anything of that?
Yes, I did, but it just sort of kind of went away a bit.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so no self-hate, because that's another group we want to unwind, right?
Mm-hmm.
We always want to do everything with compassion and kindness. That's our how. And so if we undertake a change in behavior that is not done compassionately, then we are actually adding fuel to the self-hate circuit, and we don't want to do that.
Oh, I think you just articulated what I think is happening for me and what I'm seeing, because I must be getting awfully close, because I'm watching and I'm dropping that self-hate. And the thing that really helped in the last 2 weeks was when on the 18th, we had April the 18th as No Self-Hate Day, I had such a good time looking at this thing because I could disidentify when it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Right, that if you can't go to self-hate because that is your practice, then there's the ability to watch something not happen and not get re-identified. Not only am I identified with this behavior, if I if I watch the behavior and then do the behavior, if I get identified with self-hate, then it's not helpful, because what I'm going for is presence. What I'm going for is to be at center. And so re-identifying with self-hate is not helpful. And that's where we start breaking the circuit, right? So if I can not identify with self-hate, then I'm here for the next thing that conditioning wants to do to me. And being here is the point of all of our practice, and assists you to be there when the bumping process, you know, when the idea that is so urgent that has to be executed now shows up, you're actually here for it and can choose not to go with it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I realize that the things that, you know, that are bumping in the queue are all important things, and they're not frivolous things. But it's just, it won't get me to the places that I need to be with the timing that I need to have. When I take time to do those things that I think, well, I might not have time later or whatever it is, then there's all sorts of different pressures that come on to be at a place at a certain time. To get to that thing will be a lot more stressful because there's a time crunch now, and then there'll be a little time arriving, and then a bit of time with beatings, for example, like that. So that it is changing, and I guess there's probably a sense of wanting something to change so much, expecting it to change, and so ego sort of ups it a little bit more. I think the stepping back and watching, recording, observing, and it's just breaking it down that way that is helpful.
Yeah, what a great point. That if we are willing, because it will use anything against us. So if our attention is actually on making a difference, and one way that the bamboozle could happen is for ego to up the standard, up the expectation, up the pressure, right? And when you recognize that and are unwilling to go with it, then there's one more way in which we're not submitting to its control, to the ego control. So no self-hate, no expectations, no expectation of changing. I'm just paying attention and paying attention really, really closely.
Yes. And the final thing, the paying attention closely, I decided that every Wednesday will be a day of no self-hate, because it was easy for me to pick, in between all the other practices, that I can pick the middle of the week to say, oh, this will be a primary focus. It's Wednesday. Oh, yes, it's no self-hate day.
That's such a brilliant practice. Right, when we recognize that when we set things up like that, somehow or the other, that intention or that structure we've trained to practice with really supports us in making that choice. That's the focus. So all day today, Wednesday, no self-hate. That's really brilliant.
Thank you. I've been so enjoying everything, the year-long retreat, Sherry's birthday, all the practices that are offered, and I appreciate everybody's participation.
Well, and deep kasho for yours.
A deep kasho.
And thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. Ashwini, I think I'll join Janice tomorrow in another No Self-Hate Day.
Excellent. We can all do that every day. But to choose a particular day, it makes it one of those things that's, it's about making agreements, right? That, you know, if I say I'm going to practice no self-hate every day, conditioning can come in and make my life hell around that. But if I say I'm going to, you know, carve out a particular time and space and intention, it's just so kind and so supportive.
Yes. Exactly. You're breaking up a little bit, Ashwini, and I can still hear you. And I think we have time for one more caller.
Okay. Well, I didn't move a muscle, so I don't know what's going on.
Okay, great. Here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Vanessa from North Carolina.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa. Hey, Ashwini. Hey, Michael. Well, I'm happy to be here. Let's see, and I really appreciate the last conversations about, you know, just that it's the bringing of the awareness to whatever it is that's actually going to allow for the way I was understanding it, like allow for the space for the transformation, like allow for the freedom mm-hmm. of seeing something else, of another way.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that when we allow ourselves to be with what's going on for me right now, or what's going on right now, there's a way in which we expand the awareness and allow life to reveal whatever it wants to talk to us about, whatever we need to be seen.
Yeah, and so one thing that I was looking at sort of around that, I'm sure it's all related, but was about from the retreat that around feelings was how, like, there's a certain sensation that's associated with a story, and that sometimes there's sometimes there's like and it just seems like I can think about this thing and then the sensation arises, and they seem like mm-hmm. they're together.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
But in fact, the sensation doesn't mean anything, and even the story maybe doesn't mean anything. But I guess I'm wondering, like how do they get connected? Or sometimes what I notice, another way of looking at it is sometimes what I notice is I'll have a thought, a sensation arises, and I'm going along, and I actually forget what the original thought was, but
uh-huh.
I still have this sensation. And then I start looking around like, what's that? Wait a minute. Why am I feeling this way?
Mm-hmm.
As a
mm-hmm.
way to kind of,
mm-hmm.
I guess,
deal
with the sensation.
Yeah, so there's a thought, and then there's a sensation. And then the attention moves away from the thought, but you're aware of the sensation, and then there's the ability to actually have the attention come back and query the process to go, huh, what's going on here? Why am I feeling this way? And when you do that, Vanessa, what do you notice? Did I go away? Oh,
no,
yes,
no,
okay.
Sorry. I was just thinking of what I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I noticed that, one of the things is that there's a sort of a looking around for, okay, what's wrong? That's
mm-hmm.
one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's
mm-hmm.
wrong that's making this feeling like, what did I do wrong? What did somebody else do wrong? What that?
Uh-huh.
And then I guess there's sometimes that, I mean, the other thing that I notice is if I don't sort of go out searching around and just stay with whatever that feeling is, that sensation, rather, it dissipates.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's that's such a brilliant observation, right? So the thing I love about the process you're describing is, so there's something in the retreat that you're invited to explore, and you're watching this movement of attention between sensation and story, and then you recognize the thought, the sensation, and then recall that you're aware that the thought is not there, and then the attention goes to
wow, is there something wrong? Why am I feeling this way? Which I project is going to that same story, right? That same system to tell us what the sensation is in order mm-hmm. to interpret it. Mm-hmm. But it's not waking up into inside the story. It's waking up and referencing the system that's going to tell you the story of something wrong. And it's a different level of subtlety of awareness, right? So you're not in the story. You're just aware of the sensation and a story that's attempting to take over. And if you reference the story, then there's the experience of something wrong. But if you stay with the sensation, then that's not your experience. What you experience is a sensation, and it moves through. So the it's not being maintained, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And perhaps the connection between the sensation and the story is attenuating because the attention is purely on the sensation and not on the story.
And that's kind of the... That the connection can be attenuated, which I think means like thinned out, kind of. Is that
uh-huh.
right?
Yes. Uh-huh. Exactly. In fact, disconnected. Right.
Right. And so that it can be, is kind of the proof that they were unrelated in the first place. Like if I couldn't do that, if I couldn't just stick with a sensation and have it dissipate. Without that story, I mean, that just couldn't happen. Like, it's like the proof.
Exactly.
Like,
yes, that it proves that what we were looking at is it's a sequence. That
right.
things that have been stuck together may not be actually related. And your experience of that, the ability to stay with the sensation and have that
Nope, now you did go away.
Ashwini?
Yes?
Ashwini? Oh, we lost you there, mid-sentence.
Oh, no.
Have that, you said have that something.
Well, you're having that experience of being able to know that the sensation and the story are unrelated.
Uh-huh.
Because if you stay with the sensation and bring all the attention to that, there isn't the experience of there's something wrong here. You only have that experience when you reference the story. So
right.
the story and the sensation are not connected. It's a sequence, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so sometimes it just feels like the story and the sensation really are glommed together, like they are the same
mm-hmm.
thing. But since I've had this other experience where I can really pull them apart, I can... It feels like I could make a recording and listen to that and say, no, you've actually experienced this. It's not true. You don't need to get sucked into this conversation and then trying to figure out how to manipulate the situation to make the sensation go away. They're unrelated. Just let
yes.
it go. Drop it.
Yes.
Drop the story.
Yes. Yes. Can you hear me, Vanessa?
Yes.
So that's sensation, right? Once we have the experience by paying really close attention, which is what we've been talking about around breaking addictions to sugar or breaking you know, thoughts bumping other thoughts and all of those things, that when we pay such close attention, we discover... all the fact that we don't actually have to engage with this. Up into the story of something wrong, then I know I'm referencing the story, which is maintaining the sensation. What I have to do then is to redirect the attention to the sensation and stay with it, because then it will pass, and that is your experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited. I just can't stand in one place.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that just drops
it's
in
with
freedom,
that is, right, Vanessa?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's always what you're always saying is drop the story, get in the moment. Like, that's it.
Yes, drop the story, get in the moment. That's it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we do have to train ourselves to that level of paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very subtle. It's thousands and thousands of thoughts
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Ashwini? Ashwini? Are you there? Ashwini?
I'm here.
Oh, there she is. There she is.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Yes. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. Ashwini, that was a great way to end the show with really teasing apart the sensations from the story. It's great.
It was. And, you know, real apologies to everyone about the technology. I'm not sure what to do.
Yeah, well, I can hear you now. So, as you know, all we have is now. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful you were here with us tonight. So thank you very much.
You too, Michael. Thank you for always.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.